out, everybody.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Lights Out. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your host, Austin, introducing myself for the first time here.
And I'm the producer, Daniel.
Well, guys, we are back with another haunting for you. You've asked, and we are delivering yet again. This one is very, very creepy. We're going to be talking about the Wyrick family. And this haunting really seems to begin with a young girl, 3-4 years old at the time, that she started interacting with an imaginary friend that turns out to be a real person, not in the flesh, but in spirit. And then things just get progressively darker from there.
Yeah.
And crazier.
Pretty wild. And you'll might hear a familiar name. One of the researchers, one of the parapsychologists we've covered before, he'll show up. He'll yes. recognize him.
Not Ed Warren.
Unfortunately not.
No, he does not make an appearance in this one. But William Roll.
Yeah.
A more scientifically based yes. paranormal researcher.
Yes, he tries to go for the data.
The data over the over biblical God. Explanation yeah. for these strange happenings. But before we get into the episode, I wanted to just plug our merch for a second, because really happy with how it turned out. And for those wondering, we sold out of our first run of the Ouija board blankets. Officially
Damn.
Sold out.
Gone. I will be honest, I sleep with it every night now.
It's a great blanket.
It's my little blankie.
It's your little blankie. Yeah. Yeah. It's in my office. It's my office blankie, because my wife is not too keen on having a Ouija board in the house, whether it's a blanket or a board.
So I've heard, yeah.
Because she's worried I might spread it out and start doing some sessions on it, potentially. But we've got some more blankets on order, so if you missed out on the first round, don't you worry. We are bringing it back, and there'll be more this time, so we can make sure that everybody out there that won and one gets one. And those that have got them, it seems like you guys are loving it. It really is. We tried to find a good quality blanket. It's thick. Austin sleeps with it. It's warm.
Yeah, it's warm as hell.
It's
yeah.
Sherpa underneath.
It
is.
Nice. It's so soft, too. Highly recommend.
Great for humans and animals.
Yes. And once I leave the bed, Jerry gets in there. She
snuggles up in it.
Yeah.
And then also, based on popular demand, we are working on releasing a t-shirt with the Ouija board design, because how can we not? It's just such a sick design.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out for that. We'll have more updates around that t-shirt coming out here in the coming weeks. But thank you to everybody who bought merch. You know, if you buy merch, we'd love if you tagged us on Instagram and let us see you in your merch. There's just something really cool about seeing you guys rep the show out there in the real world.
I know. I haven't actually seen one in the real world, but I'm waiting for the day I actually catch yeah, someone
same,
in one of our t-shirts.
Same. I mean, Danny's repping the merch every day. So you get gold medal for top fan over here. I mean, he's how many lights out items do you have now?
Probably close to 20, 25.
I got a lot of t-shirts. Most of your wardrobe.
Yeah. A lot of black.
Love it. So yeah, if you haven't checked out the t-shirt and the long sleeve, those are sick as well. Check it out, lightsoutcast.shop. We really appreciate all the support. But let's just go ahead and jump right into this family haunting. This one is spooky as hell, and we could be dealing with a demonic infestation with this case, or just some funky energy, some electromagnetic shifts and pulses causing hallucinations.
Yeah, that's a big theory. Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see. But our story begins in the sleepy town of Ellerslie, Georgia, which very small town, unincorporated community even, on the western side of the state. It sits about 20 miles outside the city center of Columbus. And even today, it just has a population of about 1,000 people. That's
very
a
small.
Teeny, teeny, tiny town.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in a small town and there was more than 1,000 people. I think there was more like 5,000 people. But somebody who's grown up in a small town like that, you know just how close-knit this community is, how everybody knows everybody, and unfortunately, everybody knows everybody's business, which was what my number one pet peeve of the small town.
Yeah.
And just everybody dates everybody. And like, that was kind of weird.
Yep.
Your friend dated this girl, and then now I'm dating this girl. And then you see where I'm going with that. Like, it's just very
I grew up in the suburbs, so I didn't really grasp that. I mean, there was the jokes about it. I was like, you're dating your cousin. You know, that was like the big joke for small towns. But a small side note, I'm sorry, before we get into this, I just watched Mayor of Easttown.
I haven't seen that yet. Yeah.
Holy shit. Highly recommend. A great crime. And it's a miniseries.
Who's the leading actor in that?
Kate Winslet.
That's
She's
right.
So good.
Really?
Yes. She crushes it. But they capture that small town vibe really well. And it made me understand small town gossip way more, because I never really understood
it
that much. Yeah.
It's bad.
It's very bad.
You can be essentially cast out of your small town for any number of reasons.
Yeah. One infraction or just one rumor, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Don't even get me started on the rumor mill. It's
Josh had like 20 rumors about him.
Oh man, so many rumors. Anyways, the young Wyrick family moved to Ellerslie in late December 1988. It was a previously abandoned one-story, three-bedroom ranch-style home. You know, although the house wasn't, you know, anything special, they had a lovely yard. It was just big enough for their small family, and the Wyrick family consisted of Andrew, Lisa, and their young daughter, four-year-old Heidi. A few months after they moved into their new home, Heidi started expressing that she was lonely. You know, she's just went through this move and she's very young, so it could be very difficult to make friends in a brand new town. But she did finally make a new friend, but it wasn't the type of friend her parents had hoped for. She met him in March 1989 and called him Mr. Gordy. The old man had approached her while she was outside playing and simply asked to be her friend. As a dad with a young child, that is alarming to hear your child say, yeah, this Mr. Gordy came and said, hi, it's my friend.
Yeah. You're
like, what?
If any old man is approaching any four-year-old unattended, we got a problem.
I mean, there's some older people out there who are just looking for friendship.
True.
I don't want to judge everybody, but
yeah, I take
think
that
your
back.
First instinct is this is kind of weird. Like, what's going on here?
I guess this day and age,
like, because an elderly person could have lost their significant other. You know, their grandkids don't live nearby, so sometimes they, like, I mean, even with my daughter, we were out, and whenever we run into, you know, elderly people, they'll come up to the table that we're eating at and be like, oh, your daughter's so cute. Reminds me of my grandkid. And you just are like, oh, you know, nothing.
Yeah.
Although I must say we had this very weird, sorry, this is a side story, but we were at Chipotle and we were just sitting there eating and this woman comes up to us and she's like, starts out just like most interactions. Oh, your daughter's so cute. You know, what's her name? But then she was like, I love your daughter. And we were like, that was the face that we made. And we're like, okay, that's great. She's like, I was praying for your daughter over there.
What?
And just started saying, and then was like, it went from saying weird things about my daughter to, did you know Hillary Clinton's dead? And we were like, okay, all right, thanks for saying hi. And we started like trying to like, they're like, okay, thanks, you know, appreciate it. Now leave. Like,
oh, I have a problem where I would probably egg that lady on. Like, tell me more. I want to hear more of this lady about this spouse.
Yeah, we were getting super uncomfortable and she was so close to my daughter. She was sitting in her high chair, kind of back turned to her. And she just was like, oh, she's so pretty, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, okay, this is kind of creepy. And we're like, all right, we got to go now. Like, we quickly finished eating and then like dipped when she went to get in the line. But very strange interaction. She was a little bit older too. Not quite senior, but very strange.
Yeah.
Say the least. But
it's always the Clintons too. They always go straight.
I know,
for the
dude. It was like as soon as, because she was like, oh, you know, our country's in so much trouble. And then it was just like, all right. I know where you're going with this. We don't need to have this discussion.
No, and it wasn't going to be a discussion. It was just going to be her lecturing you on something.
Yeah. But what really pisses me off is when people just touch my daughter.
Oh, absolutely.
And like, just like start like petting her head or like, and I'm like, stop.
Yeah. This, I'm, I mean, I'm sorry, this isn't like 1940s where we just, we interacted with kids a little differently. But yeah, so there is a fine line. Not every old person that interacts with your child is a pervert, but there are boundaries to be drawn for sure.
But if your young daughter is going out to play in the yard and she says, Mr. Gordy approached me and he's now my friend. Yeah, I would want to see what's going on with that a little
bit
more.
Who is this guy?
Yeah. So obviously, when Heidi later told her mother about what had happened, her mother, Lisa, absolutely freaked out, thinking that some strange man had tried to abduct her daughter. But later she realized that Mr. Gordy was probably just an imaginary friend. When Heidi described what Mr. Gordy looked like to her parents, she said he was an old man with silver hair, dressed in a black suit with shiny shoes, and he sometimes wore a hat similar to a pork pie. My first thought would be like, where'd she get that description from?
Yeah, very detailed.
Very specific, yeah. On a daily basis, Lisa would watch Heidi walk around the house in the yard, her hand always stuck out in the air in a clenched fist, you know, like you're holding hands with somebody. Every day, Heidi would wake up and see Mr. Gordy sitting on the edge of her bed, and they would spend entire days together. Lisa and Andrew figured that their daughter needed a new imaginary friend to keep her company after the big move. They probably didn't expect this imaginary friend to be an old man, though.
Right.
I mean, usually it's another child, a kid, or it's something, an animal even.
Right.
A lot of people had, like, I think one of my imaginary friends was like an animal of some sort.
I remember you said on a previous episode you did have an imaginary friend. I never did, really. I mean, I would like fake having one because I was like, damn, all these other kids are getting cool imaginary friends, but I don't have one. I kind of just wanted one out of jealousy, but...
Just make one up. Just,
yeah.
You know, you're like, or a famous person or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting because if you look at, there's a lot of studies around imaginary friends. Like, for example, in a 2004 study, researchers found that nearly 65% of children have imaginary friends by age 7. So it's definitely like starts maybe around toddler, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old. And by 7, almost over half of those people that they studied, they all reported having imaginary friends. And what's also interesting is the percentages skew a lot heavier towards females versus males, which is interesting. So there's a possibility my daughter might end up having an imaginary friend. Hopefully not. She's a very social kid and she just makes friends everywhere she goes. So just go up to people, start rubbing their back and just be like, hi, hi, hi. But for me, I can relate to Heidi because I moved around quite a bit when I was young. I've moved, I think it's up to like 15 times in my life.
Wow. So you were always the new kid.
I was always the new kid. And I don't really remember my 4, 5, 6 years old, but I know that I definitely had some type of imaginary friend at some point. And it can be a way to kind of cope with some of those big changes. I mean, it's very hard to make new friends and constantly, you know, be introduced to new environments. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think some people are like, oh, it's worrisome if you have imaginary friends because, you know, you're kind of, you know, becoming a recluse a little bit, or some people think it's you pulling back from social interaction, but it's actually a positive thing.
Yeah.
From many psychologists' standpoints, it can improve problem solving skills, exploring ideas, improve management of emotions, exercise new behaviors and roles, and create an opening for difficult conversations. And like I said, it's just a way to ease children through challenging transitions and routines. So since the family had just moved homes, which already is a tough transition and can cause loneliness, it seemed like Mr. Gordy was really a blessing. But Lisa soon became a bit more concerned. Heidi began treating Mr. Gordy as if he were a real person in the flesh. She once told Lisa that Mr. Gordy looked as real as she did, and when they held hands, he felt like a real person too. So that's like the one thing when you start looking at the studies around imaginary friends that they're like, okay, if they start saying that they're real, like real. You can touch, see them.
These kids know, they acknowledge that this is an imaginary friend. This isn't real to me. Yeah.
So this was a little bit alarming to her parents because they're like, okay, she actually believes she's seeing this Mr. Gordy and it's not just imaginary to her. But the two begin taking longer walks together. They'd go outside of the swing set, and Heidi would even claim that Mr. Gordy pushed her on the swings. Occasionally, Lisa would become paranoid about where they were going, and other times she thought there might have been a real person behind Mr. Gordy pulling the strings. If he looked real and felt real, maybe someone was trying to manipulate Heidi and lure her away, which is always a fear. Meanwhile, Lisa's sister Joyce ended up buying the house next door. They helped her move in, and when Joyce got the deed for the property, she began looking through public records and the sale history out of curiosity. And sure enough, a name immediately stuck out on one of the documents. A man named James Gordy. She recalled her sister Lisa telling her about Heidi's imaginary friend named Mr. Gordy. James Gordy did not own the home, but he was the previous owner's executor. He reportedly lived at 1529 Hilton Avenue, Columbus. Either way, Joyce told Lisa about the connection to her new house. And when they dug a bit deeper, they also found that the house had once belonged to a woman referred to as Miss Kelly, who still lived in the area. Her family had owned the property since the early 1900s. So Lisa decided to get in touch with her. When she did, Miss Kelly informed them that she knew James Gordy personally. He had been her mother's caretaker and executor at some point, but he had passed away back in 1974. They also asked if he looked like Heidi's imaginary friend did, an old man dressed in a black suit with shiny shoes who sometimes wore a hat, and Miss Kelly confirmed this is often how James Gordy looked on any given day. I actually have a photo of Mr. Gordy, and sure enough, he's wearing a black suit and tie. So pretty spot on. Seeing the obvious connection between Heidi's imaginary friend and James Gordy, the family did a bit more research to figure out what was really going on, and here's what they could find. Born on June 19th, 1888, James Scarborough Gordy was the son of a doctor, and he went on to own and operate a real estate company in Columbus for about 60 years. He was an active church member and a Sunday school superintendent at Ellison Methodist. Miss Kelly had been a student during his Sunday school classes, and Mr. Gordy was also a Columbus Chamber of Commerce member and the Mount Vernon Masonic Lodge member. He married Frances Josephine Ellison, and they had three children, a son, Colonel Stephen Gordy, and two daughters, Frances Jane and Mary Ellison. James died at the age of 86 on September 25th, 1974, over a decade before the Wyricks moved in. He was buried in Park Hill Cemetery in Columbus, Georgia. Some rumors speculated that James had a small fortune on the property, possibly during the Great Depression. It might have been Miss Kelly's mother's money as well, and he might have been trying to lead Heidi to the location, possibly. The Wyricks asked Miss Kelly if there were any odd activity at the property or next door while her family owned the place, and surprisingly, she said no.
So the Wyricks got even more concerned when a second imaginary, in quotes, friend showed up to the house. One day, Heidi heard the doorbell ring, and when she answered the door, she encountered a man who called himself Khan, supposedly. He appeared at the front door in a t-shirt soaked in blood, and his hand was wounded and wrapped in bandages. Khan then asked Heidi if she wanted to go outside and play on the swing set. So Heidi went to ask her mom, and when Heidi told her mom about the man and asked if she could go outside to play, Lisa freaked out and rushed to the door. Like, who is this strange man coming to my front door talking to my child? She hadn't even heard the doorbell ring, and she didn't see any man at the front door or when she looked up the street. Her first thought was that it was another man trying to abduct her daughter, possibly. She then called Andrew, who was still at work, and told him to come home immediately. They were concerned a strange man had approached their daughter. If it was just another imaginary friend, why would Heidi imagine a man wounded and covered in blood? Seems pretty violent for an imaginary friend, right?
And given she's very, I mean, she's a toddler at this point. Yeah. So how would she even know this type of imagery at that age?
Right, yeah. When Andrew got home, he flew into a blind rage. He just expected this is just some creeper in the neighborhood. He spent the next few hours driving around Ellerslie looking for a man who matched Heidi's description, but he never found anybody. From then on, they made it a house rule that Heidi was no longer allowed to answer the door.
Which, good on these parents for being vigilant.
Yeah, like he left work to go try and hunt this guy down, thinking that there was something was wrong, and then... Yeah, I think that's a good... Were you allowed to answer the front door when you were growing up?
No.
Okay, I could, but I lived in a pretty safe neighborhood. They weren't really worried around. Like, also, you could kind of see through the top of the door and through the windows at who was at the door. So if I didn't know him, I just didn't answer it. But if it was the neighbor, I could answer it.
Did you have like a peephole on your door?
It was kind of weird. It was
or like, you have a window you could see.
Yeah, there were windows at the very top. So if you were upstairs, you could kind of snipe your way. It's like, who is that out there?
Yeah.
I don't trust them. Yeah. Usually it was just the salesman or whatever. It was no big deal.
Good old solicitors.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even think my mom really answered the door that often. It was usually my dad. We lived in a few sketchy areas throughout my childhood, and some high crime, like a couple apartment complexes with some high crime going on
for sure.
And so they definitely were wary about, you know, who answered the door, which is smart.
Yeah.
You
know? No, real smart. You also, if we knew them, they would most likely come to the back door.
Right.
Because, like,
right.
If you were friendly and we knew you, then we could just see you through the kitchen window and be oh, hey.
Exactly. Now with doorbell cameras.
Oh, yeah.
It's like way easier. Now you can just, like, not ever answer the door. Yeah. And just
you're just like, talk who to are them. You?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I do that a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Just be like, I don't want to come in. What do you need?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not interested.
Mm-hmm.
And just save that whole interaction at the door.
Yep. So yeah, pretty safe. Good rules to establish here. But Lisa finally accepted that maybe her daughter might have been seeing something that wasn't exactly an imaginary friend. And a thought crossed her mind. Basically, what if Heidi was maybe speaking to the spirits of the dead? We already know that with Mr. Gordy, there was something going on there. We have historical records of that man, and she described him pretty accurately. So, I mean, it seems like a logical next step for this case.
Yeah, and there's actually a phenomenon out there with young children not only speaking to, you know, having psychic abilities and potentially speaking to those that have passed on, but also remembering past lives, which is a very interesting thing. And there's some very compelling stories out there of young children who remember exactly who they were. They know all these details about, like, one boy remembered being a fighter pilot, I believe, in one of the world wars.
Have you ever heard of this case? Yeah.
If you're interested,
he knew the details of, like, the planes and everything. Yeah,
he knew the planes, he knew names, and they actually went back into historical documents and found everything was exactly as he had said. And there's no way this kid would have known any of this information.
Have you guys covered that on Mile Higher? Because that would be a good Mile Higher episode.
Kendall has on her channel.
Okay, nice.
She's done a lot of the past live stories on her channel. So if you're interested, she's got a bunch of videos on some of those stories, and they're profound, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in the past lives, you know, regression and memories and things like that. You know, like if you're ever wondering, like, what my spiritual beliefs are, they tend to lean very heavily towards reincarnation. Maybe not in the traditional sense or the Buddhist explanation for it, perhaps, but I do think there's something to reincarnation. And some of these stories tend to back that up. So maybe, you know, maybe Heidi's even, you know, having some of that as well. Is it past lives? But with this, obviously she's speaking to an imaginary friend. So the parents are leaning more towards spirits. At this point, but something to consider.
Yeah. But either way, it was getting pretty serious. So Lisa sat Heidi down to have a talk. She explained that the real Mr. Gordy had passed away years ago, and Lisa decided it would be a good idea just to go and visit James Gordy's resting place in Park Hill Cemetery. This way, maybe Heidi would just let Mr. Gordy go, realizing that, you know, he just let him be at rest here. He's a dead man. But this part's strange. When they arrived at the cemetery, Lisa didn't know the location of his plot yet. They were going to figure that out after they arrived. But somehow, Heidi already knew exactly where he was buried.
See? So, like, one theory is Mr. Gordy somehow communicated the location to her. Mm-hmm. But part of me leans towards, is Heidi Mr. Gordy reincarnated?
Mm.
And that's who she was in a past life. I don't know.
Yeah.
One possibility.
Yeah. Or even if she wasn't Mr. Gordy himself, maybe it was someone who knew Mr. Gordy.
Yeah, exactly. Could have been
his wife or, mm-hmm. yeah. And here's the kicker. She didn't even know how to read yet, but she set off straight to the Chapel of the Pines mausoleum, outer front, second level, space 115. In the granite of the mausoleum read, James S. Gordy, June 19th, 1888 to September 25th, 1974. But Lisa's plan didn't really work out, and unfortunately Mr. Gordy, he still came around the Wyrick house even after the cemetery visit. Back home, they invited Ms. Kelly over again, and she brought some old photo albums that her family had passed down throughout the years. And as she was going through the photos, she handed a few over to Heidi, and after looking at them for just a moment, she pointed out a man. She identified him as Khan, which if you remember, that's the injured man who rang the doorbell and asked to play with Heidi on the swing set.
I wonder if Khan is a nickname, like Conrad or something, you know, is it a nickname or is it like, obviously think of like a convict.
Convict. Yeah.
Con man or something like that.
And strange enough, the man she pointed out was Miss Kelly's uncle, Nathan Alonzo Batchelor. And he actually went by the name Lon or Lonnie. So maybe she had just misheard or something. Who knows? So Lon had died decades before in 1957 of cancer at the age of 73. And get this, he had lost his hand in a cotton gin in Ellerslie before he was 20 years old, which would explain that hand injury she saw. Catherine said that Lonnie had lived at the property next to the Wyrick's house when he was a teenager. So he has some familiarity with that property. Andrew and Lisa then discussed, okay, what should we do next? Things are getting pretty real and weird and creepy here, so the first decision they made was to find a way to distract Heidi from Mr. Gordy and Khan. So they did. They did this. They bought a dog, and they named it Sheba, hoping it would be enough of a distraction for her to ignore the spirits. I think this is honestly a great plan for a kid. Dogs are a great distraction. I remember my grandpa passed away and 9/11 happened within like months of each other. And was it a coincidence that we finally got a family dog like a few months later? So I think it's a great distraction. It brings a lot of light into the house.
Absolutely.
It's adds some responsibility, takes up some time away from the kid. Maybe if they have this imaginary friend or this spirit, possibly they'll just direct their attention towards the dog. I think it's a great idea. But not long after getting the dog, Lisa's niece Bernice came by to visit, and they noticed Sheba would growl and bark at empty hallways and closets. At any given time, the dog became agitated inside the home, and when they took the dog out to the backyard one day without a leash, it bolted off, and it never returned, unfortunately. Goodbye, Sheba. Meanwhile, Mr. Gordy and Heidi were still the best of friends, thick as thieves. They hung out every day. She continued to walk around the house and speak with them daily, but the entities weren't as exciting to Lisa and Andrew. They were more of a problem at this point. And at first, they began hearing objects move in the house. Things would begin sliding and creaking along the floors in the middle of the night. Sometimes doors would slam and jolt everyone awake. Another day, Heidi had a playdate with one of her friends, which this time was a real living friend. And the friend began freaking out when she watched as a living room chair was yanked by an invisible force. Then the chair flew across the room like someone had picked it up and thrown it. During other nights, Lisa would be in bed when she heard rumbling noises above her head, and other times she heard disembodied voices speaking above her, and these voices would often whisper,
"Lisa, why are you?"
That's scary. Yeah. You just made goosebumps pop up all over my skin just now.
Good.
So their first thought for the family was that we need to get the hell out of this house. We need to move, which I think if we started experiencing this, I think this would be definitely a thought you'd have. But of course, that comes with some challenges, right? You can't just up and move out of your house, especially if you own your house, which they did. Plus, you know, you put all this time and effort into your home. The last thing you want to do is just abandon it over really anything. I mean, unless it's really, really bad, right?
I had a very strong emotional connection to my house back in Hamtramck.
I was going to say, in your childhood home, were you in the same house your whole childhood?
Yes. Yeah, my parents bought that place back in 1990, I think. And yeah, I lived there my entire life. And they still live there.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
So that house, yeah, a lot of emotional connection to that house.
Yeah. See, I never had that. And I have no emotional connection to any of my houses. No matter how much I love the house either, I'm like, oh, I could get up and move and be completely fine. But Kendall's the same way. She grew up in the same house her entire life. And there's that, you definitely build that connection with it.
And the Hamtramck house was a heap when I bought it, and my dad and I put so much energy into revitalizing it. So I think that's also why it wasn't just the house itself, but it was just like the blood, sweat, and tears that we put into it.
Did you like carve out a little bit of your soul and leave it in the,
I should have
the foundation?
I should have left like a message or something in the walls, something like that.
Well, do you think, because we'll get into this later, but do you think this idea of like imprinting on these places, do you think when you do put that kind of energy and love into a property, even though it's this, you know, non-animate thing, do you think you can imprint some of your energy upon it that stays around?
I think
after you're gone.
Honestly, I think I have at that house. I still talk to the owner.
Really?
Yeah, the new owner.
And he's like, I hear these voices. Yeah. It sounds like this strange man. It's interesting. My grandparents, they've been in the same house for 50 plus years, and they're still living in it now. And they're my grandfather's 94 and my grandma's 85. And I'm like, that's crazy. And I just was there this past weekend, and I'm like, God, that, like, just thinking of this whole idea of like imprinting on a property. I'm like, if there's any example of this, it's going to be them. You know, obviously I hope they live for as long as they do, but I'm like, after they are gone, I'd be interested to go in there and see if I still feel the energy of them, you know, if they, you know, kind of leave this lasting impact on this property. Cause it's like, I can never imagine it being anything else other than their home. Cause they've been there. I mean, the first and only owners of this house.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I would love to buy it. I'd love to just like keep it in the family and like hold on to it in memory of them when they're gone. But I wonder about that a lot. And maybe that's just me being a paranormal believer that I'm just so drawn to this idea. But I don't know. I feel like there's something to it.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Or even just a sentimentality, you know, just like, I feel like a part of me still exists there.
Mm-hmm.
Just as whatever that be, whatever energy that is manifested, whether memories or whatever, I think there's definitely a part of me there.
We see a news headline, Hamtramck house haunted.
Haunted by a podcaster.
So the Wyricks are wrestling with whether or not they, you know, because of these entities and the paranormal activity they're experiencing, whether or not they just up and move. And obviously financially just not an option at the time. I mean, to move is a huge expense, and you know, you don't want to put your kid through that again as well. Plus, Heidi never seemed afraid of the entities, and she always claimed that they were friendly. So Andrew and Lisa decided to stay in the house, and they would end up staying there for several more years. On top of this, Lisa became pregnant with their second child in 1993. And one day, Heidi, who was now about 8 years old, came to her mother. She was in hysterics after she saw a menacing figure in the home's hallway, and Heidi warned Lisa that something new had entered the house. Something evil. And she named it the Dark Figure. She could see the dark figure like a shadow. It looked vaguely human, but had no face, and she could detect it by the temperatures rapidly dropping in any given room in the home. She often saw it in her bedroom even. In fact, she had apparently been seeing it for months, but just recently, it began acting more aggressively. At first, this dark figure just stood there, making the room cold and still, but then it began manipulating physical objects and even pulled Heidi's hair one night. During the mayhem on February 3rd, 1994, Lisa gave birth to her second daughter, Jordan, and the paranormal activity only got worse from there. One day, her parents also noticed Heidi had scratches on her face across her cheek, but they figured she might have just accidentally scratched herself with her nails in her sleep, or maybe she fell while playing in the backyard. They figured, hey, kids get scratches sometimes, it happens, and they tried to explain everything logically while ignoring what was really happening. What do you think about that? What do you think about spirits or entities having the ability to physically scratch somebody.
I don't want to be a party pooper, but
that's okay. Tell me how you really feel.
I don't know. It's like the lore tells us that it's
the Lord.
The ghost lore.
Yeah.
It's like poltergeists can move things, right? And this doesn't seem like a poltergeist, but even outside of the lore, I don't know. Physically manipulating things like that, I'm not really sold, especially if it's scratches, because you can get, I've had unknown scratches where I was like, where the fuck did I get that? But then I'm like, well, I was mowing the lawn yesterday. Maybe I hit a twig on my ankle or something like that. And that's me as well. I just always really skeptically, logically think about things before I'm like, whoa, it was a ghost, you know? But what's your take up till now? What do you think is going on here?
Ooh, it's tough. I mean, I know earlier I said, you know, maybe she's just remembering a past life or something. I don't think that's the case. I think she's actually communicating with something. And it seems like it's a spirit and a benevolent one when it comes to Mr. Gordy. But now we have what appears to be some dark spirits making an appearance here and potentially interacting. It's tough, though. Like, as far as the scratches go in this particular case, I do think this is likely self-inflicted. Because I agree with you. And there would be far more evidence to suggest physical attacks occurring as a result of some type of haunting. I mean, to this date, no one's ever died
right.
from a haunting or possession or spiritual or spirit attacking them. Although poltergeists can get crazy sometimes, but I don't really know if there's a poltergeist involved with this. It seems to be full blown apparitions happening. We were talking about a shadowy figure here. So I think something malevolent has entered the scene, but what exactly is yet to be determined. The family couldn't ignore any longer, though, when Andrew got attacked by the dark figure. Andrew once claimed the only thing he feared was God. Amen, brother. He was never entirely convinced there were entities in the house because he usually never experienced them by himself. After the attacks, though, this seemed to change. At first, the wounds appeared on the side of his torso, three gashes wrapped around his rib cage. Later, he found more on his back, then on his chest. Then the family noticed black birds gathering outside of their property, way more than usual. Now, this is freaky.
Yeah.
Because I actually have a personal story that kind of lines up with this. Yes. Not crows, but I guess they're not fully black, but they're magpies.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So at my previous house, which was where the Lights Out show started, and lots of crazy things have happened there, as I've mentioned over the years, and I might have mentioned this story before, but my brother Joel, he stayed over at my house one night. And that night I was gone. I was not there, but he sent me pictures because he said that the prior night he had heard banging on the front window of my house, and he went and looked, and there was obviously nothing going on there. He's definitely experienced some weird things there. But the weirdest thing is that the next morning he woke up and he had a series of scratches kind of in the same area that Andrew's saying, like kind of the rib cage lower.
Oh, I remember the story.
And yeah. I wonder if he still has a picture. I'll have to ask him if he still has a picture of that, because I think he sent it to me at one point. But
he showed me at one of the company gatherings.
Yeah. Years ago. He had these three deep scratches, like purple, red scratches that looked fresh on his side. And he's like, I have no idea how I ended up with these. And as far as I know, he's not scratched himself while sleeping in that way. Although I will say, just to put all the info out there, he's a big sleepwalker.
Oh, is he?
I don't know if he's sleepwalked recently, but I know as a kid, he was a big old sleepwalker. Like we had to put chairs in front of the front door because he would go to the front door and like open it and try to leave.
Oh, damn.
So maybe that has something to do with it. But then again, like why would you take your hand and just... scratch yourself like that? And there was that strange pounding at the window that night, and I don't know. There was a lot of weird things that happened at that house and the studio as well. So I don't know. And there's a bunch of, we had a bunch of magpies that just all surrounded the house like at all times. We had a lot of trees, so maybe they're just hanging out in the trees. But I have magpies at my new house, and they were not there in the numbers that were there at that old house. And they were annoying as fuck, dude. They shit all over the yard. They would torment my dogs. Like, magpies are aggressive birds.
Are they?
Yeah, they eat meat. They would come eat my dogs, like, fresh dog food. And they will attack, too, sometimes, like, swoop down and, like, they're very vicious birds. Hate them. And they're annoying as shit.
That's brutal.
But there was like a ton of them all the time just hanging out around, because the Lights Out studio was in the backyard, and they would just be like surrounding this. And when I think back on them, like, that's kind of creepy. Maybe there's something to it. But
I am reading the magpie is associated with omens, prophecy, and divination.
Bro. So I'm telling you, man.
Also regarding your brother, that's a great concept for a movie. A sleepwalker, and like they get up and they start like walking around the house, and then a demon notices that they're sleepwalking, so they just like gash them and leave. And then the person wakes up the next day like,
thinking they're doing this to themselves.
Yeah, like what the fuck? And then they'll tell people and they're like, well, you're a sleepwalker. So no one believes them until,
dude, that'd be a great movie.
Shit goes down.
Shit. I like that idea.
Yeah. I'll pitch that to anyone, any of our friends out there. If you want to write the screenplay, I'll read it.
Let's do it. First Lights Out film.
Yeah.
So maybe there's more to this. You know, we don't know exactly what kind of blackbirds these were, I guess, but I'm assuming if they're all black, probably a crow.
Oh, yeah.
And crows have similar, symbolic.
I know they're, usually spirits of the dead,
right?
Like they embody them,
kind of symbolize death. So Andrew tried to explain to a friend what was going on, but they suggested that maybe it's just a rat sneaking around at night, crawling up on your side and just digging for food in your skin or something.
Stupid.
Like what? I don't know.
That friend didn't know what was going on.
No, that friend is a rat.
That's what it is.
Which obviously makes no sense whatsoever.
No.
To Andrew, it almost made less sense than some sort of demon scratching him. But then enters William Roll, Dr. William Roll. By now, years had passed since the Weyricks had first bought the house, and in 1994, Lisa reached out to parapsychologist Dr. William Roll. The local librarian gave Lisa's name and contact information. Again, you might remember Dr. William Roll from our previous haunting episode, or rather the poltergeist case, the Seaford poltergeist case. By 1994, William Roll had gotten pretty famous in the paranormal community. He had worked on hundreds of cases throughout his career, and after studying at the University of California, Berkeley, and Oxford, he later joined J.B. Ryan at the Parapsychology Laboratory of Duke University. Ryan Research Center is now its successor and is still in operation today. Andrew and Lisa knew that Dr. Roll was a well-respected parapsychologist in the field, and as they told him everything about what was happening in the house, Roll did what he always did. He came at it with a scientific approach, which is good. We love science.
Yeah.
Definitely good, because you never know. Maybe it is something that could be fixed very easily. There's something giving off some weird, electromagnetic energy, radiation. I mean, who knows? Or you just got carbon monoxide leaking in your house.
Yeah, honestly.
For all you know,
it's
good to look at the science first.
Yeah. And I know parapsychology is a pseudoscience, but at the end of the day, who else is going to research this, you know?
Which I feel like that's stupid that parapsychology is considered a pseudoscience.
I think
I get that it's not based in around all the scientific laws and everything.
Yeah.
But why isn't there that taken more seriously?
I mean, I think the thing is coming to a solid conclusion about anything seems really impossible to do with these cases, given just the nature of what's going on. You know, even if you believe it, it's just, we've seen time and again in all these cases, actually getting tangible physical evidence is just really hard to do.
True. But why do we always have to come to a conclusion? Why are we so focused on getting an answer all the time?
I think just the nature of science is very answer driven, or at least explanation driven, not necessarily
But answers. Is there things that science can't explain?
100%.
And why should that be discounted? Right, or any less important than something science can explain?
Yeah. No, well, I mean,
what did we do before we had science?
We just made shit up.
Right, exactly. Until science came along and then we were able to start figuring some things out, but it hasn't been that long.
Yeah, true.
In comparison to how long the universe has been around and how long the human species has been around.
Yeah.
So is there some wiggle room there to consider things that can't be explained and don't have a definite end or answer?
I think
why not study that? Why not like put all of our resources into it? I get science is the foundation for studying that, but science continues to evolve and new discoveries are made constantly. So why can't we take parapsychology more seriously and think about, well, maybe we don't aren't able to explain it right now, but why should that stop us from researching it or developing new theories? And also, can science be changed? Like, is it this concrete thing or can it be changed? Obviously, science would be like, well, give me evidence and we'll change it, right?
That's the whole thing.
So that's the difficult part. And I think technology and human evolution to some extent hasn't caught up with parapsychology and a lot of this phenomena that we can't explain, right?
Yeah. And I think just the nature of this will always be a fringe kind of pseudoscience. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Whether you believe it or not is one thing, or looking at the data that they do collect, you know, I guess keep an open mind and
I think that's just being open is good.
Yeah. And I think it's more onto the observer than it is like, okay, they're not accepted in the, you know, worldwide community of scientists as whatever label you want to throw on it. But at the end of the day, it's at least fun to consider. Just keep an open mind about it.
I just hate how there's some scientists out there who aren't open-minded and become so convinced by the science that they refuse to accept any other possibility. Like a great example of this is Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
I initially liked the guy, and then the more and more I listened to him and learned about him and his views and viewpoints on space and astrophysics and things like that. And the more I was turned off by him because he's just so arrogant about it and so matter of fact, and like, especially when it comes to extraterrestrial life, right? And just, you know, some of his viewpoints, I'm like, yeah, that could be one of, but he's just so certain about it. You know what I mean?
I think a lot of his fan base over the years has kind of turned away from him because of his attitude towards things, where it's like, obviously he's a very smart guy, but yeah, every time you listen to him talk, he's like, it's this way or no way.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's just like scolding you.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, I'm just here to learn. Can you chill out? Yeah. But yeah, he does have an arrogance about him. He does have that stubborn mentality of like, it is this way. And I mean, yeah, there's things, I don't know, not to get too podcasty in this, because I'm not a scientist or anything, but, you know, it's like, yes, I do think that there are things in science like gravity, which you can document.
Ooh, you haven't heard Terrence Howard then. This guy's...
I'm honestly not, I will be honest, I am not open-minded about anyone who has theories on gravity, because I just don't want to hear it, because we have documented this one thing happening consistently throughout the entire universe. And I think the people who are trying to go against it are just doing it to be contrarian and to get views and stuff. I think.
Really?
Yes.
So he also says 1 times 1 is 2.
Yeah, I'm not you for guys. This. Yeah, I'm not for it. I know he was on Joe Rogan recently. Yeah. That was the most batshit interview I've ever seen, I think. I mean, it's a spectacle to watch.
Yeah.
You're like, this guy, it's like watching a train crash.
Interesting.
Anyone who's, trying to change fundamental laws like that, I'm like, get out of here. You're an actor, dude. I'm not having it.
I'll trust the scientist over the actor when it comes to science.
Regardless
of whether or not I like the scientist.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too. And it's like, look, I don't know enough about this either, but I'll trust the guy who's been studying it his entire life.
Sure, sure. He's got a PhD in it.
Yeah, like he's smarter than me. We just have to admit sometimes there are just people out there that are smarter than us, and we have to trust them. I think that's kind of what it comes
down
to.
Well, I mean,
to.
A lot of good things have happened. You know, society's improved because of scientists and, you know, discoveries that they made. And we also have way more knowledge that we do feel like we can trust because of the way these systems are built to educate people and to train them and to, you know, the amount of work and effort that is required to get a PhD in any subject is extensive. So, you know, they're tried and tested as opposed to somebody who maybe just picks up some books or
who was in Iron Man.
Or just, you know, has some crazy trips and is like, oh shit.
You know,
I know some shit now.
Yeah.
So
it's about credibility at the end of the day. Yeah. Which I think, you know, as far as Dr. William Roll, even though I might disagree with him, I like his approach. I like that he's very grounded and he genuinely wants to figure these things out to a scientific degree, whether that pans out or not. I kind of respect him for what he's doing, even if any of our listeners see this as like a fringe pseudoscience type of bullshit. I don't know. I think if you look more into William Roll, you'll understand that he genuinely wants an answer out of it. He's not just trying to make stuff up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's pretty evident from his work and, I mean, how much experience he has in this, too.
Yeah,
I think that accounts for something.
Yeah. So, anyways, Dr. Roll, you like that? In September 1994, he visited the house and brought a series of pictures with him. They were portraits of 10 men, all of similar age, and one of whom was James Gordy. He showed Heidi the pictures, and she was able to immediately point out James Gordy with no hesitation. Roll later reported, quote, "Having spoken to Heidi and her parents, I'm even more convinced that we are dealing with genuine parapsychological experiences. Then the question comes up, why are these things happening to this little girl?" So Roll, as a trained psychologist, he didn't detect any signs of mental illness in Heidi, which is important to note. And when he asked her about the entities, she explained they looked and acted real. And when she held Mr. Gordy's hands, he felt real too. Plus, as far as Roll could tell, Heidi didn't even have any concepts of ghosts at the time she first met Mr. Gordy back in 1989. She was only 4 years old at the time. I don't even remember. It was maybe like Casper the Ghost. So I did have a little bit of introduction to ghosts at a young age, but
I wish I was introduced to Casper. I would have loved Casper as a kid.
Yeah.
But I was told that was a demon.
Yeah. Your parents were
absolutely demonic.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I even watch Casper, I'm opening my soul to the devil.
God damn.
That serious. Like that serious.
Woo. Wow.
Intense.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I opened my soul to the devil. Was Casper.
Explains a lot about you.
Yeah.
Explains a lot.
So Dr. Roll then used different types of equipment to measure the phenomena inside the house. He and his small team found a source of strong positive ions close to Heidi's room, which could negatively affect a person's mood and their perceptions. They also measured differences in temperatures in all rooms of the house, but really didn't find anything unusual. At night, Dr. Roll wired the house with sensors to determine if the fluctuations in the magnetic fields occurred over time, which might affect the right temporal lobe of the brain and cause hallucinations. That's Dr. Roll's theory that we're going with. Apparently, the magnetic field had spiked to 40 milligauss in Lisa and Andy's room, which confirmed his suspicions, and Roll believed that spikes like these are what can cause people to experience what they call hauntings. According to Dr. Roll, these were just visions and hallucinations caused by magnetic fields.
So, just a fun science fact for you. What generates positive ions? Electronic devices, obviously.
Okay.
Like televisions, phones, and computers. Fluorescent lighting.
Okay.
Toxic carpeting, upholstery, and paint.
That's weird.
So, with this kind of house, maybe it's that.
True.
Or she just had an iPad hidden somewhere.
True.
running
that 1994 iPad.
Yep. It
looked like a brick.
Yep. Or air pollution. But for that to happen, be in a crowded city or industrial zone. So
important to note. He also conducted a geological research in the Columbus area to find the source of the electromagnetic activity. And while examining local newspapers, he found a report of an earthquake, which might have produced fluctuations in the Earth's magnetic field at the time. And this convinced him that the environment around the Wyrick home was the actual cause of the apparitions. He also theorized that Heidi might have been experiencing what he called, quote, place memories, which is a form of parapsychology. It's the idea that a place can actually hold the memories of past events or emotions. We were kind of touching on that earlier with the houses. Roll was one of the first to propose this theory, and he argued that people can sometimes sense or feel the emotions, sensations, or even events attached to a particular place, even if they were not present during the original occurrence. Residual memories may be imprinted on the environment by intense emotions or traumatic events.
I really like this theory.
Yeah, and it plays off this older theory called the stone tape theory, not the stoned apes theory.
I love that one too. Yeah. That's another good one.
Yeah, but this actually dates back. This is some UK psychic researchers going back to the 19th century. So this one has been around, which is kind of familiar, almost a little logical when you think about it. But the stone tape theory is that the idea that certain building materials, actually, such as stone, can act as a tape. If you remember, if you were born, you know, before 2000, you might remember cassettes, tape, things on tape. Anyone remember that, man? Shit? Yeah.
VHSs. Videotapes.
Yeah.
Cassette tapes.
Yeah.
You had to rewind that shit. You have to sit and wait.
Yep.
Rewinds.
So sorry if we're old. Josh and I remember tape things, but essentially these building materials will act as a tape or a recording medium for past events. And this theory argues that the physical environment itself, quote unquote, records the events in a paranormal way. But Rohl's theory is a little different. It focuses mainly on emotional and psychological experiences causing impressions in the natural world.
Obviously, really no way to scientifically prove this, right?
Exactly.
Like, how do you gather evidence of this?
Exactly.
Is this something invisible that really can't be measured, or there's no device or metric for measuring this? But it's a very interesting idea.
Yeah. And we were talking about like pseudoscience. I think this is kind of what makes it pseudoscience.
Yeah.
You just can't like collect actual data,
tangible to measure or study necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like
it's a concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I think it's a one worth considering that our feelings, emotions, and energies, and also traumatic events that take place, you know, I'm a believer of love is like the most powerful thing in the universe. Like, love transcends everything. So for me, you know, and again, a lot of this comes back to spiritual beliefs and, you know, religious beliefs even. So obviously those things aren't measured by science. It's all personal, right? It's all based on your own personal experiences. But I don't know, something about that theory really resonates with me, and it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And that's why I think Dr. Roll, he sounds very grounded. Like, he thinks about these things kind of in depth, which I like, rather than just like, oh, it's this or that. He dives into it a little bit deeper, which I like. But he took this theory and he explained it to the Wyricks, and he also told them about the seismic fault that existed near the property and the possible effects of magnetic impulses. He, in the end, believed Heidi had a unique sensitivity to place memories because the magnetic impulses stimulated her brain, causing her to hallucinate. So quite a theory there.
Yeah, and I think the one issue I have with it is if it was something like a seismic fault, I mean, they're not the only ones living on this fault, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't there be a chance there'd be others affected by it? Again, around maybe Columbus. There are others affected by it and experiencing hallucinations, but they're just not saying anything about it.
Yeah.
But that's my only thing with it is like to take the environment, because I mean, there's probably other houses, similar age, similar building materials, similar types of histories, and how come it's just this house and Heidi specifically?
Yeah, and I think maybe to rephrase, he's more saying that Heidi is unique.
She has a unique
psychological,
there's something with her brain.
She's predisposed to this, but it's heightened because of these magnetic impulses.
That makes sense, yeah.
To rephrase a little bit. He also mentioned that there were a large number of positive ions near Heidi's room, which could have also contributed to her visions. In the end, he emphasized to the Wyricks that he didn't believe any demons were in the house. Good. Okay, good news. He told them he sensed nothing but love in the Wyrick family home. So kind of trying to leave them on a positive note, which I also appreciate. Seems like how often there's a lot of fear mongering when it comes to hauntings. So it's just unique seeing a guy who's like, no, there's a lot of love here. There's no demons. We're just trying to figure these abnormalities out.
Well, especially if you're religious. I mean, that's triggering.
Yeah.
You know, if you have any sort of religious beliefs or upbringing, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You got demons here.
Yeah. Demons.
Devils at work in this house. Yeah.
Worst case scenario, really. He then left the house feeling confident that he had done all he could for the family, and unfortunately, he could not explain the scratches on Heidi and Andrew, and even though Andrew believed that Dr. Roll was an intelligent man, he thought maybe there was more going on beyond what Dr. Roll could explain.
Because it was demons.
Oh no.
A demonic infestation. During the investigation, word spread that a renowned parapsychologist had visited the home. Rumors spread around the Columbus area, and people labeled the Wyricks' place a haunted house. And of course, the journalists came snooping around. One unnamed journalist allegedly scheduled an interview with the Wyricks. As he approached the house, he sensed a presence, and as he looked at the house, he saw a dark, faceless figure lurking in the window, staring right back at him. After this, he immediately canceled the interview and left the property. The investigation and attention to the Wyrick house only seemed to worsen the problems. Years passed and not much changed. Even Jordan began experiencing things when she was old enough to be on her own. At around 3 years old, Jordan was caught by her mother speaking to someone who wasn't there. Heidi could also see and communicate with a new entity who had become known as the Phantom Girl. According to Heidi and Jordan, the entity was between the ages of 4 and 8 and was often seen wearing a green blouse and shirt. It's believed the little girl had died in a car accident long ago. Heidi promised her mother, Lisa, that the Phantom Girl was harmless, but Lisa feared that this new entity meant that her family would never stop experiencing the paranormal. It was also around this time that Lisa's sister Joyce began witnessing strange things in the house for the first time. One night while she was alone in the Wyrick house, she heard the disembodied laughter of a young girl in the hallway. Out of desperation, the Wyricks began attending a new church headed by Brother Stephen Shelley. Stephen was a firm believer in demons. He had a very specific advice for the family. He told them that what they were experiencing wasn't a ghost. In his experience, they were never just ghosts. And what they were truly dealing with was a demon. And he assured them that they had the power to rid themselves of demonic entities through the power of the Almighty God.
I feel like it always goes here, doesn't it?
Oh, it has.
There's
to.
There's always one guy. It's like, just...
No, it's demons.
It's, yeah, it's, it is.
And, you know, William Roll came in there and he's trying to calm him down. He's like, you know, there's some potentially environmental and physical factors here that could be playing into what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
And your house is so full of love. Then they go to a new church. It's like, no, it is demons. You are under attack.
Yeah.
See, that's scary shit, man.
It is. It's fear mongering, in my opinion. They just asked him. He didn't even go to the house yet. And he's like, nah, it's never ghosts. Right. It's immediately demons. Every single time.
And there's lots of people that grow up with this.
Yeah.
And that are taught that anything paranormal or ghosts are just demons in disguise.
Yeah.
That there's no such thing as positive spirits or entities. That
right.
Everything that is not an angel or God himself.
It's out to destroy you. Yeah.
It's coming for your soul.
Harry Potter.
Drag me straight to hell. is the next step after Harry Potter. Yeah,
that's it.
Which, I love Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I love magic.
Yeah, great
I love
series.
All that stuff. And I'm reliving it as an adult, and I can't wait to relive it with my kids.
She's going to love it.
Because I didn't get to experience any of that when everybody else was.
That's right.
Sucked.
Yeah.
Because if they found that, I was a dead boy. I was reading my Bible. I'd start having to memorize verses.
So they, yeah, your parents didn't. When was the first time you watched Harry Potter? How old were you?
In my teens.
Yeah.
When I was old enough to really start going over to my friends' houses, which I didn't very often, spend the night is when I started seeing it. And then nice. I started checking out the books from the library.
Nice.
Mainly because did you do the accelerated reading program, AR tests and stuff?
No.
You ever heard of that? Have you ever heard of that, Danny?
I've heard of
AR,
it
accelerated reading
when I was in school.
No?
Yeah.
The hell?
Yeah.
I thought this was like a nationwide thing.
I also went to private school, so I don't know.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well, in public school, they motivate kids to read by doing this program called accelerated reading, where you would read a book and then there would be a test, like a comprehension test that you would take on the computer. And then depending on the length of the book and the level of the book, there'd be points associated with it. So you would read a book and then test on the book. And then depending on how you did on the test, you'd be rewarded points for it. And then there would be like, it's almost like Chuck E. Cheese, where it's like Chuck E. Cheese. Chuck E. Cheese, where you're playing games, getting tickets. So you would get points. And then at each point goal, there would be a prize.
Gotcha.
And you'd be awarded like different, it'd be like toys or like Scholastic Book Fair credits or sometimes gift cards. Mm-hmm. And then if you were like top in the school, you got your name on a plaque that would be like hung in the school hallway, which I did actually.
Nice.
In elementary school.
Because you read
not to brag or anything.
Josh read the Bible 60
yeah,
times.
All the Bible. 1,000 points per read. Yeah. No, it's the Hardy Boys books, man.
Oh, hell yeah. I was just talking about those.
I cranked those, and there's like a billion of them.
Yeah, I love the Hardy Boys books back in the day.
But that's all I had to do because I didn't have a TV, so I
gotcha.
Only read books.
Gotcha.
Which was fun. Honestly, it made me a great reader, and I worry about that with my own kid because kids are like obsessed with
screens,
technology and
yeah.
screens, and I'm like, I hope she likes reading.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to instill that in her because technology is kind of ruining that at this
yeah,
point. But
I love reading. Reading's my favorite.
Anyways, another sidetrack.
Yeah, sorry guys. We're going way off the rails this episode.
Let's
gonna have to deal with it.
Let's get back to the demons.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for, is the demons.
So we have this brother, what's his name?
Brother Stephen Shelley.
Yeah. He's like, no doubt in my mind, it's demons, you need the Lord. But the Wyricks actually asked Dr. Roll to return. He's a little more level-headed. And he even agreed to come back. Unlike Brother Stephen Shelley, Dr. Roll still firmly believed the family was experiencing strange but natural occurrences. Just hard to explain. He interviewed each family member again, and they explained the new phenomenon since he last visited. Heidi had heard the voice of an old woman while she was in the shower. Lisa had heard supposedly two demonic voices talking to each other in her bedroom. Notice she's only hearing demonic voices now after the brother told her.
And in the bedroom.
Yeah, all places. Dr. Roll still believed it was just a magnetic field affecting their consciousness, and they were most likely experiencing what's called ESP, or extrasensory perception. Some might call it even a psychic ability, and Roll believed Heidi and Jordan were highly sensitive to their environment. He then followed the theory that ESP is a genetic trait passed down through generations. So Roll ended up interviewing Lisa's parents and visited her childhood home. Her father explained that he also had experienced paranormal activity. They lived in northern Georgia, in a cultural region called by the locals as Haunted Hollow. This region's connected to the Trail of Tears, where over 2,000 Native Americans died during forced migration, and this might have made this area a supernatural focal point. That's one theory. Lisa's mother even confirmed there was an old cave in the region she had visited years before when she saw and heard strange things, including guttural screams from unknown sources traveling through the caves.
Yikes.
Yeah. Roll believed the family was experiencing disturbances only from sensitive psychic abilities, and he emphasizes again that these entities were not demons and that Heidi needed to come to terms with her abilities. Roll later brought a psychic medium, Amy Allen, to the house. She was not allowed to know anything about the family, potential entities, or the house itself beforehand, and she could not communicate with the family. When she visited the home, she instantly sensed a little girl in the house, and she could feel an entity similar to Mr. Gordy, which she called a protector, along with three other malevolent spirits infesting the house. Amy claimed the three dark spirits manifested into one entity. We got a, what's the opposite of a holy trinity? It's not a demon, though. It's just it's a dark trinity, I guess.
Unholy trinity.
An unholy trinity. There we go. The answer was right in front of me. Yep. Two were older men who had died, and the other was a younger male, faceless and dark. The energy surrounding them was negative and angry, but she clarified she did not believe they were demons. They were spirits from the dead.
People just angry.
Yeah.
For either not being able to pass on.
Yeah.
Or perhaps they, you know, just haven't come to terms with their death. And perhaps her death was very traumatic and, you know, difficult. Or they were just evil people in life, even.
Yeah. There you go. Probably.
They didn't get sent straight to hell. No. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So.
If you get in Catholicism, you can go to purgatory.
They're in the in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a. Don't even get me started on purgatory. That's a whole other.
Yeah. I know. I know we're going to go on another side rant on this one. Danny's going to have to edit out 7 hours of this. There's a cool theory though. I'll just say this. I think I've said this before. Maybe
purgatory is here.
Yes. We're actually in purgatory right now. I don't know.
Could be.
It's cool to think about. Some people think we're just in hell.
I was going to say,
that's a pretty cynical take, but.
Well, I think I'm in heaven, Austin.
Wow.
I think I'm living in heaven. There's nothing better than this.
Holy shit. I mean, hey.
I just don't turn on my TV or go outside my house. But when I'm alone, it's heaven.
Yeah. I think that's a positive thought to have. You know, it's the John Lennon imagine, like, all we have is now type energy. I can appreciate that.
Tough to keep up these days, though.
Yeah.
Tough to not look outside your window and be reminded that you're in one of the seven circles of hell. Yeah. When your neighbor, the demon, drives by, flips you off on his way to work.
But. Oh yeah, that guy.
Anyways, back to the unholy trinity.
Good God.
That Amy sing.
So. Then Lisa brought in a second unnamed psychic she had actually met through her new church, and he said he could only sense entities but didn't have the ability to see or communicate with them. That's pretty honest, or he's covering his tracks, who knows. After his inspection of the house, this medium claimed there were three demons inside the Wyrick home, and one of the demons was trying to infest Jordan's room.
He didn't get any names?
He can't communicate with him, I guess. Yeah.
So he just saw there were three demons, but
he can sense them. That's it. Yeah.
The heat, probably.
The heat.
The radiating inferno heat that he feels.
Yeah.
Another fire.
And brimstone.
Does it feel like to feel a demon?
We got to call this guy up.
I kind of like to experience that before I die or after I die.
I guess I kind of, I do know what it's like to experience a demon. It was my ex-girlfriend.
Oh, damn.
So, good God, stay on track.
This was supposed to be a short episode, folks, but
yeah, it was.
Turned
it
into
was.
A lengthy one.
It's the demons really bring it out of us, I think. But apparently another demon was trying to attach itself to Heidi, but it was in a constant battle with a benevolent spirit that was protecting her.
Hell yeah.
Right. The medium said the good spirit was most likely what Heidi had called Mr. Gordy. And the psychic then claimed he had discovered a consistent route for the third demon, which is interesting. He sensed it would travel back and forth between the living room and the wall connecting Lisa and Andrew's bedroom. And this was the same wall near the bed's headboard where Lisa would hear noises and disembodied voices calling her name. He then told them a portal in the Wyrick's living room fireplace connected the spirit world to the world of the living.
Makes sense. There's fire in the fireplace. that's the portal.
Elementary connection there. These demons found their way through the portal, and they had no intention of ever leaving the house.
So the family then asked if Brother Stephen Shelley could come back and cleanse their house. So he visited the home and blessed each room and family member. But he wasn't strong enough. Did not work. Amy Allen disagreed with how the Wyricks are handling the situation. Instead, they needed to accept Heidi's psychic abilities rather than defend themselves against what they had incorrectly identified as demons. Later that night, though, Heidi woke up screaming. She sensed a dark presence at the foot of her bed. Her parents ran into the room, and according to some sources, they saw her yanked from her bed, hovered upside down a few inches off the floor, like she was being held by her ankles by some unseen force. Eventually, she fell to the floor. For the Wyricks, after experiencing this, this was the last straw. So they're like, you know what? Fuck it. Who cares if we can't afford to buy another house? We're leaving.
Good call.
I mean, when your kid is being physically tormented at that point, I don't know what else you can do. Seemed like Brother Shelley didn't do jack shit.
No.
He did not know what he was doing. He was not a match for these demons in this house.
He's not a strong enough servant of the Lord.
This is when you got to call in the big guns. It's when you 1-800 find an exorcist.
Yeah.
Have them connect you with the Vatican.
Yep.
And get the big dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Sanctioned.
Father Amort.
Yeah, dude.
His ass on this case.
Seriously. After the move, they claimed that the paranormal activity mostly stopped. In her teenage years, Heidi no longer saw Mr. Gordy, but she still witnessed the dark figure occasionally. In adulthood, she claimed that she could still see supernatural figures and had to accept that this ability was just part of who she was and part of her life. She later said, quote, "I can sense when it's an evil presence or if it's a good presence. If I can sense evil, you won't believe the feelings I get. I've been literally sick to my stomach." Many believe Heidi is a psychic medium who has the ability to communicate with the dead, whether she likes it or not. She claims she sees so many of them that she has to take the experiences in stride. She said, quote, "Every day I wish these things wouldn't have happened because my life would be so much different. I wouldn't be known for something like this." From that statement, it kind of seems like she doesn't like the fact that she's a psychic medium.
Yeah, it's like a burden to her.
And I've heard this a lot from psychic mediums that they're like, "I didn't choose this. This is just a gift that I have." And it can definitely create a lot of difficult situations, especially in your childhood at school and being bullied and made fun of. Like,
yeah.
It's not an easy road to bear this kind of gift. And to this day, no one has truly understood what happened at the Wyrick family home. Was it the unholy trinity of just evil human spirits? Was it demons, or was it something more explainable, something a natural phenomenon of some sort, like Dr. Roll suggested? But this story did get adapted into a variety of different TV shows and a movie, of course. The Haunting in Connecticut 2, Ghosts of Georgia, is very loosely based, because they added a bunch of shit to this one. But, you know, from what I gathered, it does seem like they sold the rights to Lionsgate, I think, was the company that made that film. So, you know, people are like, well, there's your motive right there to make this shit up.
Mm.
They had this crazy story and, you know, they made some money off of it. Also, a book was written about Heidi Wyrick's story. Very interesting. If you want to go pick it up, it's still out there, I believe. This was written by Joyce, Heidi's aunt, and it's called The Veil, Heidi Wyrick's Story. So it goes into some more detail regarding her experiences throughout life. They did have a website, but it was shut down in 2013. It might be on Amazon. I mean, you can pretty much find anything on Amazon.
I saw it on there, yeah.
But if you're interested in diving into this story a bit more, that book is out there. But to this day, the mystery has never been solved. And many argue, just like we have throughout this episode, whether these were entities of just spirits of the dead, hallucinations caused by magnetic fields, or in my case, demons. Definitely demons. Right, Annabelle? Annabelle believes in demons.
Yeah, she 100% believes in demons.
She has a few living in her.
There's got to be.
Look at her.
She's got a huge head. There has to be several in there at least.
Yep. She's got some blood on her hands too, so who knows what she's been up to.
Still wet.
Still wet. Yeah. Damn.
It's just a recent murder.
But there you have it. There's the Wyrick family haunting. We made it. We need to cleanse ourselves before we leave.
I know.
Since we were talking about demons.
Did we ever order a
Yeah, some I've holy actually water? Not holy water. I need to get on that, but I do have some sage that
oh, we nice.
Can burn once we're done here.
That's good.
But yeah, I think we gave our thoughts throughout
throughout the entire. We gave a lot of thoughts through that one.
All right. Well, we got to hear from Danny though.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to,
no.
But where are you at on the scale? Skeptical, hardcore believer?
I think that she scratched herself in her sleep. I don't think that's real at all. As far as like her being grabbed and thrown, that's something that we have no proof of, so I can't really believe in it.
Think they might have made that up?
I think they might have exacerbated it just a teeny bit, but you know. And as far as the rest of the things, I mean,
what about the father? He was kind of skeptical. He's like, I only believe in God. I only fear God. And then he had some scratches on him, supposedly.
I mean, I don't believe in any of this, and I've woken up with scratches on me. I mean, I've had itchy rashes on my skin where I scratch to the point where it bleeds. So is it irresponsible? Yeah. But I don't think that this is real. As far as her having connection to like knowing where like the man's grave was without even knowing who he was, that part I can't explain. And
you think she could be psychic?
Maybe not psychic, but I do weirdly enough believe in reincarnation. So I think that
more of like a past life memory type thing.
Where that kind of makes more sense to me than her being a psychic or, you know, ghosts
or like
being haunted.
Mr. Gordy telling her where his grave is type of thing.
Yeah. Cause that like how we talked about the kid who knew everything about the World War II bomber, that doesn't make any sense to me. So it makes me believe that could be true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's quite a bit more evidence in that story, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
To back up the knowledge that kid had. Yeah. This one is it's a tough one. I think it really comes back. I think it's interesting too, the family kind of jumps back and forth between, you know, wanting getting kind of more of a scientific explanation from Dr. Roll. And then all of a sudden they're like
hopping over to church.
Let's go to church. Yeah. And then all of a sudden things just go straight to hell after that and get really, really bad. So
I get it though. You get desperate. You're just like, I want some answers. Cause I felt like even the dad, you know, after Dr. Roll left, he wasn't buying it. So. Hey, you get desperate enough, you'll just start finding all the different avenues.
Are you more skeptical that the police weren't called at any point? Kind of like in the Seaford poltergeist case, they actually called. Because if you think about it, these things are happening in your home. Does the thought ever cross your mind that maybe it's an intruder, or go back to the very, very first thought of somebody's watching my daughter, wants to abduct her? Could, you know, would that thought have ever crossed your mind again of like, is somebody stalking us or preying upon us fucking with the house or doing things when we're not home? And maybe we should call the police, have them investigate just to make sure there's no intruder or watching us.
Especially when the guy with the wounded hand showed up at the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I get call your husband and stuff, but also I'd be like, just call the police.
Yeah. Maybe they can identify the person.
Yeah.
So the police are never called in this case. So that
little suspect.
It's a little suspect, you know, because it's like, you know, they're kind of riding this out.
Yeah.
So to speak. You know, kind of like seeing where this one goes. And they are dealing with this for a long, long time before they finally decide to move.
Yeah, true.
So it's like, is it all just convenient? And, you know, they move when the story comes to a nice end with her being yanked up off the bed and levitated.
I was just going to bring that up too, where it's like, I get there's maybe a natural escalation to hauntings where more intense things begin happening, but sometimes that's also when I get the most skeptical about it being fabricated, where it's like the scratches now come into play. I was like, at no point did we ever see these entities, besides like the chair being thrown in the living room, at no point were they being physical or like violent. Then all of a sudden now they are, and now it's becoming a bit more serious. And then, yeah, now we get the nice bow tie of her being yanked out of the bed at the end, which, you know, reads more like a horror movie than it does something actually happening. So that always makes me a bit more skeptical when things escalate to certain degrees that they just don't, it doesn't seem like they naturally should have gotten here.
Yeah. I think everybody has a difference of opinion based on your level of experience with the paranormal. And I think when you've had weird things happen to you personally, it's a little bit easier to believe in these stories. Like I kind of believe the injuries thing. I know you guys are skeptical of that, but like obviously story with my brother, another story I have, and I've probably mentioned this on the show before, but my wife Kendall, we were living in an apartment, and this her grandfather had recently passed, and after he passed, she brought home one of his shirts and put it in our master bedroom closet. And what was interesting is that she had a paranormal experience where she actually woke up one night and saw the outline of a figure at the foot of her bed. And she said it kind of had like a blue hue to it, which is interesting. And I don't think she was scared of it either. And what's also interesting too, is I think animals kind of have a little bit of psychic ability. I think they're able to kind of like tap into the unseen world a little bit. So one of our cats, she would go into our bedroom and go to this one corner and just stare up at the ceiling and meow, and would do this all the time, which was very bizarre because she's never done this since at any of the other places that we live. She's never like gone to a corner and just like randomly looked up and meowed. So that was weird. But the weirdest thing was one morning she woke up and she had scratches on her chest, like right in the middle of her chest, which is kind of a weird spot. Again, you'd be like, well, maybe she had an itch in the middle of the night and she scratched herself, which is possible, but her nails weren't sharp, and they were like deep scratches. Cause that's the thing too, is like, there's a difference between just scratching yourself if you're itchy, and she didn't have a rash there before. There was just like, her skin was completely fine the night before, but these were like deep scratches, and they looked like they were scratches that had bled, but they weren't there before she went to bed. And the next morning they looked like they had bled, but had already, dried at the same time. So it's like, well, where's the blood from those? And it was like three lines, and they were far enough apart that, cause we have three cats. So you might think, well, the cats got up there and scratched her, but they were too wide for a cat's paw to have scratched, and they've never done that before either. So I think we had mentioned this story on our other podcast, Mile High, at one point, and a number of people out there were saying they think it was her grandfather trying to get her attention, and that's who she was actually interacting with. The fact that she had brought his shirt into our room, there was, you know, potentially he was there in spirit with us or something like that. It was just trying to get her attention. Others said that there's something sinister going on there. And also to back up the story of the cat meowing in the corner. So that's just my own personal experience. And that's why I tend to lean a little bit more to the believer side of things. Cause there have been some experiences that I've had that have kept me open to it. Like, am I skeptical? Do I think there's a lot of hoaxes and bullshit out there? Absolutely. But I do think there's just like, even though there's not physical tangible evidence to back it up for us to 100% believe, I don't think you can close the door completely on it. I think you can be like, well, yeah, there's a good possibility that this actually happened the way that they said it happened. It's just, but just like any other experience, it's, you know, there's, you know, I didn't take pictures at the time, you know, you don't think right, to like right. capture the evidence and like do an investigation on it at the time. So
it could happen within a blink of an eye. Right.
So yeah. So interesting story.
I'm still waiting. I think I've vocalized this many times. I would love to experience something. I said some rancid shit on a Ouija board session, opened myself up to some suspect things. I still haven't really experienced anything yet, but I'm waiting. Hopefully,
it usually happens when you least expect it. So,
okay.
You never know.
Maybe I'll stop waiting.
Yeah. But that's going to be it for us today. Hopefully you enjoyed this spooky paranormal episode. We've been loving getting back into the paranormal lately.
Yeah,
we do have a great, very interesting case for you we've got coming next week, so stick around for that. But if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you like, subscribe, wherever you listen or watch the podcast. We really appreciate it. And until next time, lights out, everybody.